Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, we are going to explore the impact of spondyloarthritis on respiratory function. Our guest today is Dr. Tristan Huey, who was trained at Georgetown University for medical school and residency. He completed his fellowship training in pulmonary and critical care medicine at the University of Colorado, Denver. He serves as the program director for the Pulmonary and Critical Care Fellowship at the University of Colorado, a position he has held since 2017. He is an associate professor of medicine at National Jewish Health and University of Colorado. Dr. Huey has been a member of the Autoimmune Lung Center and Interstitial Lung Disease Program since he was a fellow, and has served as the clinical director of the Interstitial Lung Disease Program from 2013 to 2017. In collaboration with other members of the ILD program, he is investigating novel therapies for the treatment of interstitial lung disease. He leads research to improve educational methods for pulmonologists, and he is joining us today on SpondyCast. Hi, Tristan, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for the invitation, Jill. I'm excited to join you and your guests.
Yeah, this is fun. So I'm just going to throw you right to the weeds before we get in. What made you want to become a pulmonologist? How'd you get there?
Oh, so that's a long story. One of the things that I like about pulmonary diseases is sort of the breadth and the complexity of it. And so during medical school, I was interested in lots of different things and ended up shuttling towards internal medicine, which is, diagnostics and treatment for adults. It's not really a procedural practice per se, but it's also a broad field. And when I was interested in figuring out a subspecialty, the many things about the lungs appealed to me. And so I like the physiology that's involved. I like that there's a bit of a detective work that happens, especially in this subspecialty of interstitial lung disease that we'll probably talk about a bit more, where really getting to know patients and knowing what they're exposed to and how they're being affected influences our approach.
And how long have you been, doing ILD since 2013?
Since the beginning of my fellowship in 2006.
Oh, wow. Okay. So someday you're going to be like, just longer than I, longer than I care to mention.
Getting there.
From a spondylitis standpoint, what is the relationship between spondyloarthritis and pulmonary complications?
Yeah. So I think that there's two parts to that. So one, spondyloarthritis as an autoimmune disease is a systemic disease. And so that inflammation that's happening that's primarily attacking musculoskeletal targets can also target other organs. And I think this explains some of the more common manifestations you see in terms of how folks with spondyloarthritis can get eye involvement or bowel involvement. They can also rarely get lung involvement. Many of our other autoimmune diseases, like rheumatoid arthritis or scleroderma, much more commonly affect the lungs and are more aggressive. And for spondyloarthritis, it's relatively uncommon for the lungs to be involved from an autoimmune perspective. The other major way that there's involvement is that when spondyloarthritis targets the joints and the bones in the chest wall, that gives us symptoms. And so that's the most common manifestations. We'll relate to how spondyloarthritis affects the chest wall.
And that is that the costochondritis?
It is. So there's a bunch of different names depending on where exactly it's involved.
Ooh, okay.
In the same way that you can get the the bones of the spine involved, and then the joints involved, really every connection there. So the connections between the spinal column and the ribs, and then in the front where the ribs connect to your sternum, and then where the clavicle connects to the rib cage. All of those joints are an opportunity for inflammation. And so chest pain is a common symptom that folks with ankylosing spondylitis can get, or spondyloarthritis in general.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about that, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask you to explain what interstitial lung disease was.
Yeah, happy to. So interstitial lung disease is a broad category of lung diseases that are characterized by inflammation and often scarring throughout the lung. And typically it's along small airways and around the alveoli or the air sacs in the lung.
Interesting. And is there, I know this may be just more of a, my own curiosity, but I have been, and I talked to a number of people who've had, you know, like a chest x-ray, and the doctor will say, well, we really don't see anything. There's a little something like cloudy down here, but that's nothing. Is that something that leads to it? I'm just curious.
Yeah, so that's complicated. Usually interstitial lung disease comes on gradually, but it's okay. Progressive. So without treatment, it usually gets worse. And okay. There are sort of broad categories of primarily inflammatory interstitial lung disease, as opposed to the fibrosing or scarring lung diseases.
Got it. Okay.
The scarring is real hard to treat. And we do have a couple of drugs that are available now to try to slow down that progression. But there's a lot of variability depending on what specific diagnosis within that large category of interstitial lung disease you have.
Okay.
We're going to talk a little bit about how folks with ankylosing spondylitis can occasionally get this upper lobe scarring. It's different than pulmonary fibrosis that you'll read about on the internet. And so I would caution people that when you read about pulmonary fibrosis on the internet, you're generally reading about this thing called idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, which is a relatively quickly progressing disease that's usually fatal. And what people who have spondyloarthritis experience is different. It's real slow. We don't really have treatments for it. And it often doesn't even seem to require treatment.
Oh, interesting. So stay away from Dr. Google.
Be a little careful of that.
All right. We'll come back to that. Let's get through the basics. So most common pulmonary manifestations with spondyloarthritis. We talked about COSTO.
I think the chest pain syndrome in general. I think the next most common is what we term restrictive lung disease. This is another one of those large categories. But basically the idea is that the lungs are getting smaller. And the reason that that happens with spondyloarthritis is not because of the lungs generally. Rarely it can be, but more commonly it's because of the effects on the chest wall. And so when you lose the mobility in your spine, and when you lose the mobility of how the ribs connect to the spine, then your ability to take a deep breath is limited. Because when we breathe right now, our diaphragms are those muscles that sit at the bottom of our chest and they push down into our abdomen. But our ribs also move out, and there's a lot of movement that can happen with your chest wall during a deep breath. And as you have more advanced spondyloarthritis, you can limit that movement. And then when you can't take quite as deep of a breath, when we measure those lung volumes, we characterize them as being restricted.
Interesting. And should we talk about I didn't read all the questions either, so I'm in trouble.
Some repetition. I think we are going to talk a little bit about it. I can perhaps talk about a few other manifestations.
Yeah, let's talk about a few other.
Get into specifics.
Okay, let's go.
So another thing to recognize is that if we did a CAT scan of every patient with spondyloarthritis, we would find many abnormalities, and the vast majority of them wouldn't be clinically significant and they wouldn't cause symptoms. And this is true for other autoimmune diseases as well. So when we look at folks who have rheumatoid arthritis, perhaps 3/4 of those patients will have abnormalities if we did a CAT scan of their chest. But a small subset of that group will have actual disease, by which I mean symptoms, or will need treatment over time. And rheumatoid relatively commonly does give you lung disease. It's a parallel with spondyloarthritis. So if we did CAT scans, the literature is not as robust because it's a less common disease, but we notice that there are abnormalities perhaps in as many as half of patients with spondyloarthritis, but a tiny subset of those are people who have real disease or who have symptoms. So I think this gets to this idea that with our some modern testing, we can find things that aren't important.
Right. And I actually am like, I'm stuck on what we were talking about in the green room, which is for once, like spondylitis patients don't get the worst of it, right?
Yeah, it's good. This is a good thing. We had talked earlier about how, to give you just a sense of how uncommon this manifestation is, I work in a large group of doctors that are all focused on seeing patients with interstitial lung disease. And between the 12 of us, we might have perhaps 4 or 5 cases of ankylosing spondylitis over the past 10 years. And I think some of that's because those chest pain patients don't get referred to us. And it's possible that even the folks who have the chest wall stuff, we're not seeing as often.
Right.
But when we talk about this rarer manifestation of having interstitial lung disease, it's just real uncommon, which is good.
Yeah, which is great. And so risk factors.
Well, let me tell you a couple more of the ways that
it could manifest. Oh, you got more? I didn't even know. Sorry.
Well, there's a whole list.
Nobody sent me a memo.
So there are things that are affected in the lungs. And so you can get interstitial lung disease.
Okay.
It tends to be more indolent, we call it, kind of slower moving, less likely to progress. The thing that has been most commonly described is that you can get upper lung involvement where you get some thickening around the top of your lung, and you can get scarring, and you can sometimes get cavities. And it goes by various names, but apical fibrosis is one of the common names, and bullous fibrocavitary disease is another name. But they're basically both describing this idea that for unclear reasons at the top of our lungs with spondyloarthritis, we can get some scar tissue, and then we often get these cavities. A bulla is a cavity, basically, or an open space in that lung tissue. Emphysema has been described. So this is commonly associated with smoking. And it seems like there's some increased risk if you have spondyloarthritis of developing emphysema. You can get airway involvement. And so there's a condition called bronchiectasis, where normally your airway is like an upside down tree. And so your trachea or your windpipe is the trunk. And then every time the airway divides, it should start to taper until it gets out to sort of microscopic small airways and where your alveoli are. But for a number of reasons, you can get dilation of your airways. And so then rather than tapering, it's dilating. And then you tend to get secretions that fill in that space, and it puts you at risk for certain chronic infections and then further irritation to that, to those breathing tubes. So that's a little more common in patients with spondyloarthritis.
And is that like cytokine related?
It's unclear. So it is probably partly related to the immune system. So in folks who have inflammatory bowel disease, this is a much more common thing that can happen there. And so it may be that it's overlap, or it may be that subset of patients that have spondyloarthritis and who have inflammatory bowel disease that are more prone to getting this manifestation.
Yeah.
You can get collapsed lungs, which we call a pneumothorax. That's more common if you have this upper lobe disease. So if you have this fibrosis or you have these cavities in your lung, they're at some increased risk of having a mechanical break. And so then there's a leak of air where air escapes from the lung into this pleural space, which is the space between the lung and the chest wall. And so that's what we call a collapsed lung. You can also get sleep apnea. Seems like sleep apnea is slightly more common in patients who have spondyloarthritis than in the general population.
Oh.
And then we think about, you know, all of these pulmonary complications that are more common with inflammatory bowel disease. We worry about complications from the treatments. And so some of the drugs that we would use to treat, especially inflammatory bowel disease, can injure the lungs directly. I think I just mentioned infections, but if you've got abnormal lung or structurally abnormal lung, it can predispose you to developing infections. And then I suppose the last thing I would throw in is folks with spondyloarthritis are also at increased risk for heart disease. And those symptoms often present very similarly with shortness of breath that could be from your lungs or from your heart.
Yeah, that's why I was surprised that you said there's not as many of us on the pulmonary, like on the lung side, because I know the cardiac stuff is definitely there. Okay, can we now?
Yeah,
can we move on? That's a list. You've got a list there. So risk factors.
I think it's unclear. So the literature describes that the primary risk factor for many of these things is just how long have you had spondyloarthritis? And so the patients who develop pulmonary complications are often developing those 15 or 20 or more years into their disease course. And I think that makes sense in that it gives you more time to have mobility problems with your spine and with the joints in your chest wall. And that's probably the clearest link. Disease duration also seems to link with the likelihood that you'll have this upper lung scarring and may link to bronchiectasis. That part's a little less clear. Okay. And then certainly tobacco use is a risk for a variety of our lung diseases and is likely linked to a number of these, including the fibrosis, the bronchiectasis, probably to pneumothorax, the collapsed lung.
Yeah. And if anyone's interested in that, we do have a couple episodes on smoking cessation back in season one or two, which is always, I always say that, you know, it's like I was a smoker for a long time. And my rheumatologist walked in the room one day and she said, "Your biggest health problem is not spondylitis. It is that you smoke. And until you do, I'm not sure I'm going to treat you anymore until you quit."
One of the challenges is that patients who are smoking are more likely to have active inflammation, it seems.
Yes.
And there's a link both in spondyloarthritis and again in rheumatoid arthritis that ongoing exposure to tobacco smoke makes that inflammation worse.
Yeah, it's a thing. I'm not going to hammer on it anymore.
You could ask your lung doctor guest to do it.
Yes, I can ask you to do it. We'll come back to that. We're going to get back to what I'm really curious. Okay, so there's a lot of chest wall stuff seems to be the most prevalent, right?
Yes.
And how do you work on like early detection of that? Or if you're headed that direction, do you have any tips and tricks there?
Yeah, I think working with your rheumatologist is probably the most helpful thing here, because I think they're going to be providing the most help in terms of just overall mobility and getting at that underlying inflammation, because that seems to be the driver for so much of this. And so yeah. The things that you can do to both control the inflammation with medications, but then exercise and stretching and breathing exercises that can help maintain that mobility of those joints, that's a key thing to maintaining that function or to regaining it to some extent if you have inflammation and some injury already.
Yeah, it can be really, I was sharing, I had it and I remember, and every now and then I get caught there again where I kind of forget to breathe deeply and like move my lungs and then you feel it tighten up and you're, more than once. I've actually had people say like, "Do you ever breathe or do you just like," because I think we don't all do it and it does add up. I feel like it took me, and I know other people, maybe other listeners too, it took years to like really overcome the pain from the chest wall costochondritis stuff. So so early detection, make sure your room is on it. When you are with people, what kind of tests and tools do you use to help them understand what's going on?
Yeah, I think the chest imaging is probably the first thing. And so when we're worried because of respiratory symptoms, we're going to often do a chest x-ray as the first start, but it's not very sensitive. And so we'll often proceed with a CAT scan or a chest CT scan, because that gives us a real detailed picture of both the lungs and the chest wall. And then the functional testing that we do are called pulmonary function tests. And so these are PFTs for short, but they're basically measurement that you can do in your doctor's office, where you breathe in as deeply as you can, you blow it out as forcefully as you can, and we can measure that. That's called spirometry. There's other techniques where we can measure lung volumes, and we can measure how easily gas makes its way from the alveoli into the circulation.
And once you've been through that, so if you're having an issue, what typically, like for a interstitial, like what are the treatment options? How does that work?
Yeah. So for spondyloarthritis, it's less clear, again, because it's so uncommon, it's not as well studied. For other forms of interstitial lung disease that are related to autoimmune disease, we're often using things that target the immune system. And so often there's a role for steroids, but of course they have many side effects and they're not a good long-term answer. And then we'll try to use various steroid sparing drugs. One of the challenges is that when we think about autoimmune diseases in general, some drugs are very good for the joints, but they don't really help the lung manifestations much. And some are pretty good for the lung manifestations, but don't do much for the joints. And so in spondyloarthritis, the TNF-alpha inhibitors play a major role in addressing the musculoskeletal manifestations.
Sure.
And that's true for rheumatoid as well. But they don't seem to do anything for the lung manifestations. And we have better data for this from the patients who have rheumatoid arthritis and lung disease. But I think there's no reason to think that it's different for spondyloarthritis.
Right.
I think, again, fortunately, it's rare that people need immune suppressing treatment for their lungs. And so that part, I think, is reassuring. And I think our advice would be, if we saw abnormalities on a CAT scan that made us worry about this, we'd want to get a pretty clear sense of how it was behaving. And we'd do that by following along with folks sort of longitudinally to see how their symptoms were changing as they were getting the musculoskeletal parts under better control. And we would often do breathing tests periodically because it's a great way to measure the objective function of the lung. And we may do periodic CAT scans depending on, you know, what the situation was for a given patient. And that would also help us know both what's the natural history, and then are they responding to treatments?
Yeah, and you talked about research for a second. So not a ton of research for spondylitis. And I'll just do a plug for certain organizations like the Spondylitis Association of America that would love to hear from pulmonologists who want to study our diseases specifically. That's my plug. Tell your friends. Are you aware of any ongoing research right now in spondyloarthritis and pulmonary?
Yeah, I think that I did a quick look through the clinicaltrials.gov, which captures all of the clinical trials that are happening. And really there are two types of trials that are being done in spondyloarthritis that relate to the lungs. And so they're basically what we call these natural history trials, which are important because they enroll patients who have spondyloarthritis and then they follow them over time. So that we can see how this changes over time, which is really important because much of the data that we have right now is what we call cross-sectional data, where people at a place that takes care of a relatively large number of patients with spondyloarthritis, they just capture all those people where they are right now and they report what's happening. But there's lots of sources of bias, and so it doesn't give us quite as much information to help us know what's going to happen to this, you know, young woman who's just been diagnosed with this disease at 20 years old.
Right.
And so to be able to capture everybody when they enter into one of these clinics and then follow them over time will give us much more information. And then the only intervention trials that are being done right now are related to physical therapy and respiratory therapy. And I saw a trial related to yoga to trying to improve people's respiratory status there.
Interesting. I'm always curious on the yoga stuff. And that one, it kind of leads into my next question, but you know, from a lifestyle perspective, like I have a yoga teacher who makes us do a ton of breathing. Like that's the first third of the class is just breathing for these reasons. And I never knew that we have more than one diaphragm. We have three.
I don't even know about the third one.
There's one above the roof of your mouth.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. It's really interesting, right? It was fascinating because, you know, if you're trying to get your chakras out or whatever, but this is, it's really key. So when you're with patients and potentially like around the chest wall stuff or other pulmonary issues, what do you suggest? Like from a lifestyle perspective, modifications, et cetera?
Yeah, I think, as we've mentioned, this idea, the ways that you can improve somebody's mobility is really important. And so the things that they can do to try to improve their chest wall mobility is key. And that's going to be a core treatment for the spondyloarthritis. I think avoiding smoking is obvious. I think engaging in aerobic exercise is really important. And there's some challenges with this, with rheumatologic disease, where if you overdo it, then you suffer for a day or two. But too frequently, people being told to do less, and I think engaging in some amount of regular aerobic exercise has so many benefits to our bodies, to our immune system, to our mental health. And then specifically here, we can train our muscles and our heart to get more efficient. And so for those patients who do have some lung limitation, whether it's from the chest wall or for something inherent to the lung, regular aerobic exercise will help them function better because their muscles and their heart are just getting more efficient about using oxygen. And so then that gives you more mobility and independence.
Yeah, and it's interesting how our bodies adapt, isn't it?
For sure.
We're these really complicated people or species.
Right. I'll tell you one of the things, one of my partners is a nurse practitioner named Corey Fratelli, and she's working in our dyspnea clinic. And it's a clinic here that is just trying to help people who have shortness of breath that's unexplained. And we've seen quite a rise following COVID, where many people, because of the various ways that COVID can affect our lungs and our physical functioning, have exercise intolerance or have shortness of breath. And there's this concept about a thing called the breathing pattern disorder, which is really at what we're talking about before with the benefits of yoga and breath training, that for a variety of reasons, and in spondyloarthritis, it probably largely has to do with pain, but it's going to be more comfortable for you to breathe shallowly and more quickly rather than to do sort of deeper breathing and to rely on your diaphragms rather than what we call accessory muscles. And Corey has found that you can retrain people with these breathing exercises so that they're breathing more efficiently. And people are able to get substantial symptomatic benefit by having what's essentially a breathing coach.
Wow. Is that, and when you say efficiently, you're meaning the same lung volume, but having better results?
Yeah, sort of, or with less work. So it's a lot of work to breathe rapidly and shallowly. That's not very efficient for us because the way that our lungs work, when you take in a breath, only a portion of that breath makes its way down far enough that it can participate in gas exchange. And the part that's in your mouth and in your windpipe and in your large airways, it doesn't participate in gas exchange. It's a concept that we call dead space. And so it's a breath that you took in, but that part of the volume can't offload oxygen or get rid of CO2. And when you take a deeper breath, that amount of dead space as a proportion is less. And so then you have more efficient breathing. So if we want to breathe most efficiently, we're going to breathe infrequently, but deeper breaths rather than breathing shallowly and rapidly.
Okay, you're explaining this and I'm doing it.
Yeah.
To test it. But it is different. I mean, it's, I remember the first time I went to a place, it was a yoga place, and we did like breath holding, like 16 in, 16 hold, 16 out. And it's incredible how you can, within days, you can go from that sort of shallow to, oh my gosh, I can hold my breath for a whole minute. Or and so when you're, does it make sense to, I'm going to keep asking you breath questions because I think this is fascinating. So as you breathe in, if I can parrot this back, as you breathe in, anything that's kind of not making it below into your lungs is not participating in gas exchange. So you're not having the efficiency there, and everything else is just kind of dead space, right? Okay. So if you breathe, is there something to breathing in and the hold? Does the hold make a difference?
I think it's less about the hold. So it has a little more to do with being purposeful of drawing in a full breath and then exhaling. I think that's how she's focusing. I will admit that I'm not an expert in this, but
no, that's good.
Work
that's good.
Adjacent to each other. I think it's less about the breath hold. Yeah, and it's more about taking deeper breaths, less frequently.
Yeah.
Because breathing is interesting because you can control it voluntarily, but usually we don't. So we've got this right. Involuntary rhythm that will take care of it for us. But with voluntary practice, you can influence that.
For sure.
And that's, I think, where the benefit is primarily coming from. So we'll notice folks who have a great deal of difficulty with exercise, and we'll watch them on a exercise cycle test that we can do. And we measure how deep is their breath, how often are they breathing, and a variety of other variables. And for some of these folks, they very quickly start to breathe very rapidly and very shallowly. And then you can't keep that up. And so you can't reach your full exercise potential with that real abnormal breathing pattern. And that's what Corey's trying to get at and help retrain folks.
Sure. And you, over time, and I've noticed it in my own, you're making me feel bad because I've been slacking on cardio. And I'm like, as soon as we get off the phone, I'm going to go get on the rower. But once you get in the rhythm, I think, of some of the exercises, we do get to control it. It's like, it's almost a choice at times, right? And it's a learned, I think it's learned for sure. This is why people can do endless cardio, unlike this girl. And then let me ask you another question about breathing. Is expelling, like, is really emptying your lungs when you breathe out important at times?
Yeah, it generally happens automatically because we've got just normal recoil of our lungs and our chest walls. And so normally we don't have to work a lot at that unless you have something else going on like asthma or something that's limiting that flow. I think when Corey's counseling folks, I think there is an element of being mindful about breathing in and breathing out so that you can develop that right cadence.
Right.
And try to avoid that idea of just picking up speed and breathing too rapidly and too shallowly.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, so otherwise, to make your lungs the healthiest they can be, is there food? Does sleep help? What else do you?
Yeah, so it all helps. I think one of the things that medicine is getting back to appropriately is recognizing that healthy living is good for us in general, right? And so exercise, healthy diets, healthy volume of sleep, like all of these are things that help our bodies work better. And none of that is specific to spondyloarthritis.
No, it's not. But I think there was a time we threw it out the window, right? So not completely, but we're getting back to that. Do you have any interesting like case studies around people with spondyloarthritis that you worked with that you can share?
I don't. I think this is where it gets back to this idea that we have these 12 doctors that see all these autoimmune related lung diseases, and we have so few patients with spondyloarthritis,
no, that's...
which is good on the one hand. I think one of the questions that you were interested in was like, how do we do this in a multidisciplinary way?
Yes.
And so I think getting a pulmonologist involved to help with some of these symptoms is useful. And I think those centers where rheumatologists and pulmonologists work together, you're going to get better outcomes. I think in many cases, the role for the pulmonologist is to understand, is this primarily a chest wall problem? Is there something inherent to the lung? Do you have something else, right? Because it's you could certainly have spondyloarthritis and an unrelated thing like asthma that we can help with. And so I think being deliberate and thinking through the process of what may be contributing to the symptoms is key. And then whenever we're bringing folks together with complementary expertise, I think it just results in better outcomes for patients.
Yeah, for sure. I think so. Okay, last question, not on the list. what's your moonshot if you had unlimited money and budget to research or solve a problem?
Yeah, moonshot for spondyloarthritis, I think.
You could do moonshot for spondyloarthritis and general pulmonology. Yeah.
Well, I think in some ways it's related. So I think being able to get everybody into trials so that we can see what's really happening will give us more information. And so I think getting every patient with spondyloarthritis at a center that takes care of spondyloarthritis and can enroll them in trials, I think that should be the goal. And that's certainly what we try to accomplish with other rare diseases.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. I'm trying to think of what you'd solve. I think lungs are going to ongoing be something that we have to like, they're, I don't want to say fluid, but like they are something that you can't just solve it perfectly.
Right. I think,
you can't make it go away.
Right. Well, so this is a challenge that we have, right? So for pulmonary fibrosis, this is the hard thing that we deal with in our ILD clinic.
Yeah.
We've had two drugs that have been available that are in a class of drugs that we call antifibrotics. And so these drugs clearly work in the sense that they slow the progression of these, you know, what are ultimately progressive and fatal diseases, but they don't cure anything. And really what we're interested in is trying to help the lung repair itself. And right now we can't get rid of scar tissue anywhere in the body, whether that's in the lung or the liver or in any other organ. And figuring out how to get our body's repair mechanisms back to working properly, where they can get rid of what's essentially this inappropriate scaffolding. That's key, because we want to be able to get people back to normal function as opposed to just slowing down or, you know, trying to treat these things that they have.
Okay, that's your moonshot then.
That is my moonshot.
Yeah, regenerative lungs.
Yes.
All right, done. It's in the universe now. All right, on that note, I'm going to thank you for your time. This has been great. I appreciate you letting me put you in the spondy hot seat here today. I would love to talk to your breathing coach on an episode.
I will put you in touch with her. She's outstanding.
Amazing. Awesome. Tristan, thank you so much.
I really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie. Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.